Coming up on the Inside Indiana Business Television podcast, the countdown is on to the 2022 College Football National Championship in Indianapolis. We get a sneak peek at a big new development at Purdue's Research District. We spotlight new innovation in golf gloves. How can nature help young people's mental health? A new effort is on to train the next generation of pilots. Another major sporting event may be coming to Indy, and Cluster Truck is growing again. Welcome to the Inside Indiana Business Television podcast. I'm Andy Ober. We're less than 200 days away from the 2022 College Football Playoff National Championship in Indianapolis. The event is expected to pump $150 million into the local economy. Host Committee Chairman J. Mark Howell joined Inside Indiana Business host Gary Dick with an update on the planning and preparation.
200 days, so it's a milestone to look ahead at what is out there. But let's look back just briefly. What's the planning effort been like, especially in light of the pandemic and all sure. those kinds of things?
Yeah, you know, we're very fortunate. Believe it or not, it was almost 4 years ago that we announced that the game was going to come here. And so we had done a lot of work, visited a lot of the prior sites before the game, worked with other host committees in advance of that. So even though the last year has been tough doing everything virtual, it really didn't set us back.
Yeah. We're going to talk about some of the special events coming up in a moment. But first, this is an event that truly will put Indianapolis on a national, a global stage. The biggest event, you know, we hosted the Indianapolis 500, obviously, in May. This is going to be another event putting Indianapolis on a big stage, 100,000 plus people downtown.
Yeah, and more than 1,000 media credentials. This is ESPN's biggest production, and it's going to take place here. So we will be not just in the national spotlight, but in the global spotlight.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about some of the events. Brand new information we can give to viewers. Some of the highlights. Playoff Fan Central. It's kind of that fan jam type environment. That's going to be at the convention center, right?
Yeah, and we're actually creating a whole championship campus downtown. So from White River State Park to Monument Circle to Bankers Life down Georgia Street, Pan Am Plaza, Lucas Oil, and back up to White River State Park will be a championship campus. And a major part of that will be the Fan Fest, where we will take over the convention center with a lot of interactive exhibits that are free to the public, free to anyone who wants to come down and participate.
Yeah, so downtown Indy being transformed that weekend. Music is always a part of these big sporting events. Yeah. The AT&T playoff live is going to be on Monument Circle.
Yeah, and so, you know, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday, they will have top talent that will be put on shows. And again, those shows are going to be free to the public. So we're inviting everyone from Central Indiana, from Indiana, to come downtown. Regardless of your interest in the game, come down and enjoy the festivities.
Food is always a big part of these events, too. I know you don't have all the details nailed down yet, but Taste of the Championship is going to be a unique opportunity.
Yeah, it's one of the most fun things that happens during these 4 days, and it's a fundraiser for the College Football Playoff Foundation, so the money actually goes to benefit teachers, but more than 1,000 people will gather for food, drinks, music. It's a great party.
Legacy is a big part of this. Any event that Indianapolis, or most anyway, that Indianapolis, Indiana Sports Corporation, and others do, there's a legacy impact. This is going to be a great example of big legacy. What's it going to be about?
Yeah, and I will tell you, for me, it's kind of one of the biggest motivators for me to get involved. And people who have preceded me in this role have always said, the most important part of this is what happens after the game. What can these sort of events have on the city? And working hand in hand with the College Football Playoff Foundation, we're focused on teachers and educators and great teachers. So we're resourcing, recruiting, retaining, developing, and recognizing the great teachers in our community.
Indianapolis is also known for that special flair, that special sauce, if you will, in hosting events. At the Super Bowl, it was Super Bowl Village, which got so much attention. It was such an attraction. Is there going to be that Indianapolis special sauce for the College Football Championship game?
Yeah, absolutely there will be. In fact, that is the second most asked question after, are you worried about the weather, right? But yeah, we have some things that are very special planned, very, very, very exciting. Not ready now to kind of reveal those, but our plan was to create something that would draw people downtown. It was so unique, and give those visiting Indianapolis something to talk about when they leave the city.
All right, we'll look forward to hearing details on that. Mark Howell is the local host committee chair for the College Football Playoff National Championship game. Mark, thanks very much. We'll be doing, I know, a lot between now and then. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you.
All right.
Indianapolis minority business leaders are coming together to strengthen economic development opportunities and partnerships in Indiana with countries in sub-Saharan Africa. InnoPower founder and CEO Emil Ekiyor joined us with details on the mission.
Your story is a great one. I want to tee this up with your story. Born in Nigeria, made it to the United States, to Florida, sports a big influence on your life. Give us that quickly, that path and how you got to the United States.
Well, when I was 15, my parents felt it was a good idea for me to come to the U.S. to pursue educational opportunities with a family here in Daytona Beach. I remember when they told me that when I was 15, I was so excited that, you know, I was coming to the U.S. You know, I've watched so much about the U.S. and the opportunities that exist here. And came to Daytona Beach. But what shocked me the most was a lot of my friends that I met here, my black friends especially, were not as excited about being here. I'm at a middle school, so that's the announcement you hear right now. So, but they were not excited about being in the U.S., and I didn't understand why. I wasn't exposed to the systemic issues that my African-American brothers and sisters faced. But today, after 20-something years in the U.S., I understand it fully. But the story of coming here and the excitement of coming to the U.S. was, you know, it was life-changing for me.
Yeah, University of Central Florida, professional football in the NFL, and you're using that experience and that sports influence to really shape InnoPower. Talk about, you just got off a big global summit hosted here in Indianapolis. Talk about the mission of the organization, because it really is about talent development, especially for African-Americans and underserved individuals.
Yes. So InnoPower is simply the power of innovation. How do we create opportunities and solve problems in a different way in our black communities, here in the U.S. and also in sub-Saharan Africa? Knowing that entrepreneurship and education is truly the avenues to making a difference, but not just entrepreneurship and education the way we've always done it, but doing it with a different way, with a true focus on talent and skill development.
And that is having an impact. 3 years the organization has been in business, shall we say, and really having an impact. You've got partnerships. I mentioned 1150 Academy. You're in Gary right now as we talk as part of that partnership, the Sagamore Institute. So people are coming on board to be a part of this.
Yes. So I was blessed to really be a part of. So in the NFL, one thing I saw and the one thing I took away from the NFL other than relationships was the deliberate approach of skill development, right? So once you get identified as a talented athlete, you get plugged into this progression, and everything about that progression, every step you take is about developing skills. By the time you go from high school to college, by the time you get to the NFL, you are the top of your profession, right? Yeah. On the back end of that is also a $100 billion industry that's focused on cultivating talent from our most vulnerable populations. So we feel that model could be replicated in different industries, and it's something that we are already seeing the benefits of focusing on doing it that way.
Emil Ekiyor is founder and CEO of InnoPower, a unique model, making a difference, a lot of examples. I know, Emil, you've got a son at Alabama, University of Alabama, playing football, so maybe another NFLer certainly in the family. Thanks for joining us. We look forward to following your story.
Thank you so much, and I'll say this, I'm Roll Tide.
I knew that was coming. Thank you.
Sweden-based Saab is close to taking the wraps off its $37 million plant at Purdue University's Research and Business District. The company will make fuselages for a new U.S. Air Force training jet there. Inside Indiana Business reporter Mary Rachel Redman has the story from West Lafayette.
From
Amelia Earhart and her crew at Oakland, California, ready for her great aerial adventure, around-the-world flight by way of the equator, a journey no pilot has yet attempted.
To two aviation legends that left an indelible mark on Purdue University. In fact, you could argue their legacy, in part, has helped attract some of the top engineering talent in the world to West Lafayette.
Purdue's a leading innovator, as well as has the top engineering schools in aerospace and engineering.
So perhaps it's no surprise that Sweden-based Saab decided to expand its U.S. footprint in advanced manufacturing on Purdue's campus, officially becoming an American company.
By having that talent base readily accessible to us, it really promotes the culture of growth and innovation in product design.
That product is the T-7 Red Hawk, an advanced trainer jet for the United States Air Force and the first brand new fighter trainer for the military branch in over 60 years.
This is an important program for the United States Air Force because it's replacing an aging fleet. The T-38 was first flown in 1959 and has been the trainer of choice for tens of years since then. But it's reached its end of life, so the maintenance costs are extremely high and they're also not as reliable. And the T-7A fills that need.
And things are moving right along to start production, including the completion of Saab's 100,000-square-foot facility.
I see these blue lines on the floor. Is that going to indicate kind of where the manufacturing process is going to happen, machinery?
It is. Our portion of the aircraft is the aft section, which is essentially the entire aircraft minus the wing, engine, nose cone, and cockpit.
It's hard to imagine right now. So, I mean, literally, it's huge, right? Will it span?
It will fill the entire volume of this factory, correct.
So there'll be people working on it from up top.
Correct.
And below.
And below, correct. And inside. So given that the aircraft is kind of like a hollow tube, it's too big for us to do all of the work from the ground. So therefore, we install a second story so that we can do work safely from above.
Because generally, you can take this.
So when this is fully functional, how many folks will be on the floor?
So we'll have a little over 130 employees out on the factory side.
And while the new T-7 Red Hawk may be the most technologically advanced trainer jet ever made, its name is a nod to one of history's most celebrated group of pilots from World War II.
One of my ambitions is a combat pilot.
The tail of our aircraft is painted red, which is an ode to the Tuskegee Airmen of World War II. We look to pay homage to that.
What an opportunity like this produces is you're actually talking to someone that would employ our student. And we want our student to have relevant experiences, so we're excited to be able to work closely with them as a partner.
In a perfect world, let's say, you know, 10, 15 years from now, how do you envision Saab here in West Lafayette?
So there's going to be an incredible amount of growth. We have high expectations that we will recruit best-in-class talent. And as we continue to be a leader in the aerospace market, the possibilities are limitless.
Mary Rachel Redman, Inside Indiana Business.
Indianapolis is home to some interesting golf glove innovation. Hoosier Golf Hall of Famer Nancy Fitzgerald came on the show to talk about how The One, a single-finger golf glove, is gaining traction in Indiana and throughout the nation.
As a golfer, it's an especially fascinating story, but a real business story, too. As I said, you're an Indiana Hall of Famer, known around the state in golf circles and beyond. Give us quickly how this new idea, technology innovation, part of golf, but not necessarily when it comes to golf gloves.
Well, that's really a great point. We have been into shoes. We've been into the grips, the shafts, the heads, everything, but the glove. And there have been little changes to the traditional glove, but nothing that really fixes the disadvantages of a five-finger glove. Number one, sweaty, it gets crunchy, it's it's uncomfortable, and a multitude of everything. But nobody really has come up with something that works well and takes care of the disadvantages of your typical glove, you know?
Yeah, and this has been something, I'm gonna have you show it off here in just a second. This has been something that's been in the works now for what, four plus years?
Yes. Yes. And it started with a local businessman and a guy who worked for him. And the idea was, I wonder if there's any way that we could improve the five-finger glove. I don't know. I mean, it was a brilliant idea.
Yeah.
And so they started working with different gloves. They went through, I don't know, maybe a dozen different ones before. And then I got involved 2.5 years ago, and we kind of trimmed it down to what we have now.
Yeah.
And the thing is, Gary, it works.
Yeah.
And a lot of good ideas out there, but this thing works. It's simple. It's profoundly simple. That's probably why it works.
Okay, Nancy, just show it off here. Just give us a little show and tell of the glove, some of the advantages, and really what is cool about it.
Well, I will. First of all, it comes in white and black. a kind of a awesome silver, a gun silver in this blue, which is my favorite. But the idea is that this glove will protect your hand here as it grips the handle of the club. It is secure where it needs to be. We don't need leather on the back of our hands.
Yep.
And we don't need to feel encumbered with that. And the thing is, the traditional glove covers up your fingertips, which really are the ones that feel, that give you the feel of a golf club. And when I tried this on, I was immediately struck that this feels like I don't have a glove on. It's light, and I'm telling you, it works. Then they told me that this glove worked when it's wet, and there was a bucket next to me. I was out hitting some balls one day when I was visited by these guys, and I put my hand in the bucket, and I shook it around, and I kind of shook it off, grabbed the club, and it held perfectly.
Yeah.
And at that point, I knew there was something.
Hey, Nancy, we're running out of time. I only have 20 seconds. But this is really catching on. Top five product at the PGA show, that massive show in Orlando. It was on the Golf Channel. You're getting a lot of attention for this.
We're getting a lot of attention. And you know what? We're just getting ready to take it out to the U.S. It's in Japan. They're killing it out there with this glove, and we're going to bring it to the U.S., sell it on our website, you know, get it out there, market this thing, because this is the answer for people that have stayed away from wearing the five-finger glove. It's it's truly amazing. I would not endorse this if it didn't work.
Yeah. Very good. It is the One Golf Glove. You can go to the onegolfglove.com to check it out. Nancy Fitzgerald, Indiana Hall of Famer. Thanks very much. Continued success. We look forward to following the progress and where this product goes.
Thank you so much, Gary.
Remember, you can catch Inside Indiana Business Television on stations throughout the state every weekend. Head to insideindianabusiness.com to check listings. Connecting young people with nature may be the key to helping them overcome mental health issues. Indianapolis businessman and Ben's Ranch Foundation founder Brose McVeigh is using horse ranches and farms throughout the state to help put teens on a positive path. He spoke with Kylie Valletta in the Business of Health.
Let's start with the name of the foundation. It's named after your son who passed away. Tell us how he helped inspire this nonprofit.
Well, thank you. Yes, Ben had been diagnosed at 14 with bipolar disorder, which started a 10-year journey for us, which was a pretty rough road. And one of the things we noticed and his doctors mentioned along that path was that when he spent time with horses or animals and outdoors, it was very therapeutic, and they kind of lamented that if we could only get kids out on a farm. And that stuck with me, so we started developing that and eventually would drive him to a remote ranch in Wyoming to work for a summer, and that bloomed into about an 18-month stay. And it really reset his life and became kind of the only highlight in what would become a 10-year story. And it stuck with me. So when we lost him a few years ago, I decided we've got to bring that benefit to others. And that's what we're doing.
So this is a beautiful concept, just getting teens outside. And it all centers on these paid part-time internships. So just explain what those are.
Yeah, you know, we searched in the wilderness, it seems, for a long time to figure out how to add value and how to understand this situation. We knew where we wanted to go, which was to leverage the power of the farm and of nature and of jobs, of work and busy activity on mental health. And we came around the concept of these paid part-time jobs at farms and stables and now places like Conner Prairie. And so we play the role of finding these sites and communities, approaching the owners, managers, making the case for building a slot for our interns. Then on the other side of our organization, we attract and screen them, and we play a matchmaking role. And then finally, we subsidize their wages because we really want this to be, in all ways, a job for them. And we think that creates the maximum therapeutic value, but also fills a need, builds skills, and it sort of creates a win-win. So we want to expand that really as much as possible around the state.
And speaking of skills, this really ties into this new movement in education that's going to be required here in Indiana for the class starting in 2023, these new graduation requirements.
Right.
So explain how this is going to really work hand in hand.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. We've got a column coming out on this soon. We really think that it comes at a good time. You know, the Indiana graduation requirements for high school students, now known as Pathways in short, has a very intentional track for work-related education and internships. Well, we're out there creating them already. In fact, I spent an hour on a phone with a superintendent today trying to help them think about how we could build internships in their rural community. So, you know, what this all says to us is that we're on to something, which is that, you know, a job, especially a job close to nature, outdoors with animals, can really change the trajectory of these kids' lives. It can do so for any kid, but especially those that huge, you know, group now and growing ever larger that's struggling with mental health.
And I think it's so important that you mentioned this is not meant to replace medical intervention. This
right.
is in addition to or as a complement.
Yeah, and that's terribly important that we stress that. You know, the problem is even if we can get these young people screened, identified, treated, maybe into some counseling, and that's a big enough challenge. You know, we don't think it's enough often to just stop there. And I think society, whether we're parents, teachers, employers, we're going to have to start thinking creatively about much bigger strategies to bring to this problem. Otherwise, you know, we're at risk of losing more valuable, you know, future employers and managers and leaders. You know, we've got to really step back at every level, from parenting to education, and think about mental health in a big way. Mm-hmm. So we're really excited that the Pathways changes will sort of play into the theory and the value system we've brought to it, and we hope to play a part in it now for schools.
And we're coming out of the pandemic, feeling like we're on the upswing, but you're still seeing a kind of an uptick in demand.
You know, there's a lag. I think that's the way to put it. You know, the first 6 months of COVID, we did not see a lot of evidence of a problem, and that makes sense because everybody hunkered down. We didn't have data. The last 6 months is really scary. You know, one in five kids were estimated to struggle at some point with mental health prior to COVID. Mm-hmm. Now we know it's much larger. That is a big chunk of our society, our future workforce, and our schools. And our schools are going to have to really play an important role. And, you know, I empathize with them because they have a lot on their shoulders already.
Yeah. All right. We have about 30 seconds left, but I want to give you a chance. What do you need right now? Sort of what's the call to action for Hoosiers that might see this?
Thanks so much. You know, we're a startup. We're new. We're humble. We need people, talent, advisors, board members, you know, referral sources, advice. So we need the community to step up and help us. And that starts with good people around us. So we're looking for that kind of help.
And a big barn bash this fall at Connor Prairie.
Yeah,
right?
We want to invite everybody. October 3rd mm-hmm. is Sunday. It's a very family-oriented experience. It's our first one. We're going to have a lot going on out there. And Connor Prairie is a big partner of ours, so we're excited.
All right. Well, good luck, bros. Keep us posted as
Thank
you move
you.
Forward.
You bet.
The sky is the limit in Johnson County for young people looking at exploring a career in aviation. Aeronautical Center of Technology Education Coordinator Roger Tomey talked about how the center can be a critical part of training the next generation of pilots in our Eye on Education segment.
Hey, Roger, I'll start with you. The idea for this new center in Greenwood, it's going to open in August, so you're a long way toward that opening now. But how did the idea come about in the first place?
Well, I've always wanted to be a pilot, and I never thought there was an opportunity to do that until later in life when I finally had the resources and time. When I was a young man, that was totally out of the question. When I was blessed enough to have to get my pilot certificate, I thought, you know, I bet there are other kids who are in that same situation who would have the ability and the desire, but not the resources to do so. And a lot of schools, we found out, really were not pushing aviation. We formed our EA chapter, as Greg will tell you, in 2002, and the sole purpose of that was to get kids involved in aviation. And so we thought, let's just try to get involved with the local school corporations. We wanted to enhance their academic programs and not take anything away from them and give kids the opportunity that some of us older guys never had.
Yeah.
That's kind of how it started.
Yeah. Well, and Roger, this again comes at an opportune time. There's been a lot of talk about it, but to tee this up, there really is and continues to be a pilot shortage that's really affecting the industry.
Oh, there certainly is. In fact, American Airlines, and you mentioned a while ago about United and their problem, they're going to have a new future. But American Airlines, according to the FAA, has the oldest pilots in the industry. This shortage is going to get very critical. A few years back, the Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association did a study on flight schools on what was the dropout rate in those schools, and that included universities. The average dropout rate was 60% on this, and that's because some of these students are coming not totally prepared for what to expect in the training, and this is why we want to get it at an earlier age. That's why we started the Aeronautical Center. This opened up for grades 5 through 12. And then when the kid graduates from high school, if they get into our pilot program, which is high qualifications to get into it, we guarantee that you'll have your pilot certificate before you graduate high school.
Wow.
And that way, when you go on to the university or to other training, you're going to be well prepared.
Yeah. Greg, let's talk about this this new center at Greenwood Airport. Going to be a lot of focus on technology, innovation, science, technology, engineering, and math, STEM. Talk about the experience that young people will have at this new center.
Well, there'll be an opportunity to take a ground school to get their private pilot license. Roger and one of the other instructors here on the field have been holding ground school lessons here at the FBO building for several years. And we're looking forward to having that same type of instruction there at the Technology Center. One of the other parts of the program, high school kids will build an airplane from a kit under adult supervision. We're looking at a kit airplane manufactured by Vans Aircraft, and it will probably be about a two-year project. There's going to be some other programs there as well. You know, the STEM, of course, engineering, mathematics, science, technology. So there's going to be a variety of things there. We have the Greenwood Library would like to come out and host a meeting. They've asked to come out end of September and have a paper airplane contest. We're anxious to see how that turns out.
Yeah, Greg, I know you're focused on diversity too. You got a number of partnerships with groups around town, and that diversity issue going forward with the pilots is an issue you want to address.
Yeah, the diversity into this program is we work very closely with the Tuskegee Airmen chapter of Indianapolis. Richard Duvall, the president of that chapter right now, we've been involved with them for several years. Matter of fact, we currently have a young man from Bray Buff High School who was sponsored by the Tuskegee Airmen. He's getting ready to take his check ride to obtain his pilot certificate. That's one of the main things we want to do with this education center, especially bring in minorities minority groups.
Hey, Roger, very quickly, we're out of time, but this is not just Johnson County. This is Johnson County, also into Marion County and other areas.
That's correct. Yeah, we deal not only with Johnson County, but with all of Marion County and with the inner city dealing with Tuskegee Airmen as well on that. We're open to private schools and to homeschool students as well.
All right. Roger Tomey and Greg Hill, the Aeronautical Center of Technology in Johnson County, are going to open in August here, kind of the fall semester. Congratulations on this initiative, and we look forward to following the progress.
Thank you. Appreciate that, Gary.
For the first time in more than 20 years, the Olympic swim trials could return to Indianapolis. Indiana Sports Corp Public Relations Director Brett Kramer joined Bill Benner on Inside Indiana Sports to talk about the bid for the 2024 event, as well as the organization's upcoming Inspiring Sports Charity Golf Tournament.
Real quickly, let's look back. March Madness, the Big Ten tournaments, diving trials just concluded the Indy Ultimate. I mean, what a period for the sports corps.
It was an incredible start to 2021, but even a better start for our community to really kickstart out of this pandemic and into back in normal life when we're in person having events. But it was a tremendous opportunity for us to work with the NCAA, and it really took the whole community to make it happen. So we're so grateful for its success and really how it's driven us forward.
Well, let's look ahead to the Inspiring Sports Charity Golf Tournament. 33rd year, again, formerly known as Youth Links, raised millions of dollars, and its outreach has been impactful and statewide.
Absolutely. This is not just a golf tournament, as you mentioned. It has impacted 259 organizations throughout the state of Indiana, helping fund youth programming, everything from swim lessons to horseback riding. So the goal is to raise those funds to really impact the youth that need it most.
And special guest on Monday will be the Indiana University football coach, Tom Allen. And if you've never heard Tom speak in person, or if you've seen the video clips, the man is inspiring.
Oh, absolutely. I think we're all going to love each other after he speaks to the crowd over lunch. And that's always a really nice highlight for our golfers, that they come in, raise money for youth program, but get to experience a little celebrity status as well. And who better than Coach Allen, especially after the incredible year that your Hoosiers had.
That's right. And you were part of a delegation that went to Omaha to watch the recently concluded U.S. Olympic swim trials. Indianapolis now in the running, one of the Final Four, St. Louis, Omaha, Minneapolis, among the other contenders for a prestigious event. What were your thoughts?
We went first from hosting diving trials at the Natatorium, so we had all the Olympic fever, and then there were seven of us, as you mentioned, that went to Omaha. It was incredible. They do a very good job putting on the event. They literally built the pools from scratch, from the ground up, everything from the competition pool to the two back-of-house practice pools as well. I think what we learned the most is that they do a great job, but we're looking at ways that Indianapolis, if given the opportunity in 24, can enhance it and make it a real community event.
I find it hard to believe, Brett, that it's been since 2000 that Indianapolis last hosted the Olympic swim trials, and there for a period, Indianapolis with the Natatorium was the home of the Olympic swimming trials.
And you can't find a better pure swimming facility than the Natatorium, but what USA Swimming is finding, a lot of people want to come to this event. So that's why we look to facilities like Lucas Oil to build pools from the ground up, because it can house 35,000 plus fans versus an Natatorium is a little less than that. But we still like to keep the same traditions alive that they would get at the Natatorium. So we're looking at ways, if the event were to come, to keep the names on the wall or other enhancements so they still feel that intimate feeling of being on a pool deck.
Is there a timetable for letting the cities know what the outcome is going
to be? They've made it pretty clear that no announcements are going to be until after the Tokyo Olympics are complete. So that could be August, that could be September, but we're anxiously awaiting. But in the meantime, it's all Team USA going forward.
Real quickly, with Inspiring Sports Golf behind you, the next up for the Sports Corp is the Corporate Challenge.
Yeah, Corporate Challenge.
And again, to our business community, if you want to field a team.
Yeah, it's a great event to bring your corporation back together. You get to do everything from corporate from tug of war to relay races to dodgeball, you name it, we're putting on in this event. And you can still register if you go to indianasportscorp.org.
Well, Brett Kramer, Director of Public Relations for the Indiana Sports Corp, thanks for being on the program.
Thank you.
And again, what an incredible time. Congratulations to everybody involved. We look forward to seeing you again.
And finally this week, Hoosier entrepreneur Chris Baggett opened his first cluster truck kitchen in downtown Indianapolis in 2016. 5 years and one pandemic later, his fifth Central Indiana location is opened in Castleton. Baggett joined us to talk about the company's growth and how the delivery-only restaurant model is redefining how people order their meals.
I'll admit, full disclosure, I'm a customer, a frequent customer of Cluster Truck. But for those people, and many people know about Cluster Truck and what it's all about, but give us the model and what this delivery-only kitchen model is all about.
Well, as you know, my background being in software and Exact Target and Compendium, you know, it's really a technology-focused business where we vertically integrate to make prepared food. We have over 80 items on the menu. The goal is that your food will never be older than 7 minutes old when it's delivered. So that takes a lot of logistics, timing, cooking the food in the kitchen. Where are the drivers? How do we time that perfectly? So when the driver's coming up is exactly when your food is done, we're handing it to him and off they go, or her.
Yeah. Yep. So you've got, obviously, you've got the cooks, you've got the food and the quality food aspect. You've got the drivers.
Right.
Really, at the end of the day, it is technology that drives this whole thing. You're a technology company.
No, that's exactly right. We just realized for this to work, this being prepared food delivery, which doesn't really work anywhere, you have to be vertically integrated. You know, I throw around the analogy of Fred Smith when he founded FedEx. And, you know, he got a C on that paper because he had the audacity to say, I need to own the airplane, right? And in our case, that airplane is a kitchen. We have to cook the food to make this work. We didn't set out to cook the food. We thought we'd just be technology provider. But the reality is you have to control every nuance.
Yeah. Okay, let's talk about growth, because obviously you're getting continue to get a lot of traction. Castleton, north side of Indianapolis, your fifth location here in Indianapolis, as I mentioned, eighth overall. Talk about growth and really what's fueling that growth.
Yeah, it's, you know, we've really landed on a replicable model, and it's taken us literally the entire 5 years, you know, to get there. But, you know, the first 4 years, we were focused very much on the technology around when to cook food. Start the pad thai, 4 minutes later, start the cheeseburger, where's my driver, you know, all of that. But we realized in order to get into the suburbs, we're going to have to get smaller. We still wanted to have that full 80-item menu, but we had to be able to make money at a much lower volume. And so that got us to thinking more about how to cook food. And we've really reinvented how to cook food. Like, we don't have flat tops anymore. We don't have stoves. Everything is being made in machines. And it's still delicious, you know.
Yeah. As we wrap up here, Chris, we started running out of time here. But again, growth is continuing. You've got a big partnership you've had for a while. That's expanding, I think, with Kroger is going to help fuel
some
of that
growth.
That's
correct. Yeah. We've committed to 4 more with Kroger here in the next. They'll probably open in the beginning of the fourth quarter. And then we're going to be looking at Avon, Greenwood, Zionsville. I mean, we have big growth plans for the future.
Big growth plans here, I assume, in other parts of the country, too?
Absolutely. I mean, we fully expect, as I've always said, that we will be the biggest player in this space.
Chris Baggett's the co-founder and CEO at Cluster Truck. Again, another Indiana success story. Chris, always a pleasure to have you on the show. Thanks for joining us.
That wraps up this week's Inside Indiana Business Television podcast. Remember, you can find all of this week's TV segments, as well as the top business news from throughout the state, at InsideIndianaBusiness.com. While you're there, you can also subscribe to our platform of free e-newsletters. This is Andy Ober for Inside Indiana Business.